tough. So I want to continue what we began last week, which is to try to do a little Chabad meditation. And, you know, we spoke last week, we began talking about the inyan of the four parts of tefillah. We started speaking specifics about davening, the four parts of davening, and the four parts of tefillah, the sulam tefillah, the ladder of tefillah. We spoke about how the four parts of davening are, in ascending order, ascending the four letters of Hashem's name, Hey and then Vav, and then Hey and then Yud. And those are the four parts of tefillah, Moed Ani up to Haidu, then Psukah Dezimra, then Birchas Kriyashman, and Shmon Esrei. I mentioned to you that they correspond also to the four types of emotions, which is lower level Yira, love like, in ascending order, lower level Yira, love like water, love like fire, and higher level Yira. And began discussing a little the different meditations. We just had one. We had one example of a meditation that is to begin to put together the pieces to start understanding the different types of meditation. Now, I think it's important to point out, even though we did speak about it a little last week, I said a couple of words about it, but it's important just to point out already that the word for meditation in Chabad is called Hizboinenus. Hizboinenus. And Hizboinenus comes from the word Bina, but it's not just Bina Lahavin. Lahavin means to understand. What's the difference between Lahavin or Hizboinenus with two nuns? So in Diktuk, whenever you have something twice in Hebrew, it's stressing it. It's a very deep one. Like, for instance, Well, it depends, right? Sometimes it could be that, but it could also be very, very much that. For instance, the Torah says Adam Dam, which means very red. Adam Dam means very red.
Isn't it also
Pitka?
Which is
I wouldn't know. Don't ask me about the seven binyanim and Diktuk. I have a Kabbalah from Rabbi Kirsch, it was my Rebbe in Hafter in the, whatever it was, 7th, 8th grade, that he said, just skip Diktuk Rashi's, and since then I just read through them, and I don't even try. And so I wouldn't know. Probably Yocheva would be able to tell you better.
No, Matsu wouldn't.
Yeah, I have no idea.
So when a word's repeated twice, what happens?
Not a word repeated twice. When the word is says it twice, Adam is Hebrew, Adam is red, Adam Dam is very red. Right, so if you have think twice, it means very deeply that. So Hizboinenus, as opposed to Lahavin, is to have deep Bina. Not just to understand, but to have deep Bina. So it just before we start actually doing a Hizboinenus together like we did last week and going further with that, it's important that I want to talk a little more about that. What does it mean to have a lot of Bina? In other words, what's the difference between having Bina and having Hizboinenus? So, first of all, what's the difference between Chochmah and Bina? Bechla, what's the difference between Chochmah and Bina? Chochmah is, usually the way that Chochmah is, the difference is explained, is that Chochmah is the seminal point, the main idea, and Bina means to understand the details of the idea. And they're very much connected to the masculine and feminine. Chochmah is the point, Bina is the development of the point.
So, like macro and micro?
Well, no, it would not macro, it would be the main idea generally, to view the main idea generally, and then to have the details of the idea.
Macro or micro?
No, as far as I know, micro and macro means something reflected bigger and smaller, not the idea and then the details of the idea. As far as I know, micro and macro means that you have the whole thing in smaller or bigger. Here it's that you have an idea. For instance, I say to you, you say, Eino Mavade, only Hashem exists. That's an idea, but you have no details of the idea. Details are what brings about emotions. Details are always, that's why when you have Chachma, Chachma is like a point, is like the seminal, it's like a point from the father. Without a female, there won't be any children. There has to be the female that develops it. Bina develops it, the details develop it. The best example I could give you is that when you're sitting in, you know, Sunday morning, you're sitting by your breakfast of French toast and Tropicana and an omelette, and you whip out the New York Times, the Sunday Times, and you're reading the newspaper, and you're eating, you're enjoying your Tropicana and your omelette, and all of a sudden, you read a headline that there was an earthquake in Malaysia that killed 27,000 people. So what's usually your response when you do that, when you see that? Oh, that's so terrible. And you take another bite and turn the page. maybe you don't even say that's so terrible. You take a little glance, you know, yeah okay, that whatever. You go further. It didn't bother you. It doesn't stop you eating your French toast. But what would happen if instead of doing that, you're reading the headline, you start reading a 20-page, you know, Time Life covering of the story with pictures and details of how many mothers lost their children, how many people lost their loved ones, and you look at pictures of it, then already probably will lose your appetite, chances are. Because to bring about emotions, you need details. We can't relate to something when it's still at the level of chokhmah, when it's still the general idea, without details of the idea. You have to have the details, the pratim, that's what brings about the emotions.
It reminds me of like a symphony. They introduce a theme.
Uh-huh.
And then the rest of the symphony is the development of the theme.
Right.
That really makes it more beautiful and it causes all the emotion of the symphony.
Exactly.
Right. It's the variations.
Right, exactly. And so you'll always see that the details are what brings about that it becomes meaningful. Right? For instance, if you have a person, you know, you look at a best example. If you look at a painting, you take a quick look at a painting and you look away. You might have seen it's a beautiful painting, but a minute, 5 minutes later, you won't remember what it looked like, and you definitely can't describe it, and it won't really overtake you. If you stare at the painting, and you take in the details of it, then it could have a real effect on you, because then you're able to. The details allow it to become part of who you are. You internalize it. So bina, the details is what allows emotions to come about. That's why, by the way, I don't know if you ever noticed, whenever they have these movies of like, you know, I don't talk about Titanic or any disaster, airplane hijacking or something. So like you have 1,000 people died, but they'll reflect on 2 people, they're the ones you're going to cry about. How come? Because you have the details of their experience, that's what affects you. That's why any movie that has like a tragedy, although I don't know, they don't make the genre anymore, but when I was like in the 80s, they used to have, you know, earthquakes in New York, Manhattan falling apart, whatever, all these big, you know, cataclysmic, you know, catastrophes. So they'll focus on 2 or 3 singular stories of people. Because otherwise it doesn't make it close to you. If it doesn't have the details, that you can't experience as something close to you. So, Bechal, that would be, these details, it would be that if I would say to you, Hashem is great. Awesome, Hashem is big. Eino Milvadei. These are all catchphrases. They will not bring about emotion. You know, the reason that a person, you get emotional when you read a book, you see a movie, these type of things, the reason they're able to affect you is because there's a lot of details in them. The details are what makes it relevant to you and makes it pnimius into you. But if you just have these ideas about God, that's not going to allow to have an effect, to have an emotion. So the first thing you need emotion is not enough to have the chachma, which is the general idea. You need bina, which is details. That's bina. What's his boinonus? If that's bina, what's his boinonus? So his boinonus means, in the language of the Mittler Rebbe, he writes, the second Rebbe, he says, histaklus hachazoka v'hamoka ba'pratim. Histaklus hachazoka v'hamoka ba'pratim. Doesn't just mean to know about the pratim. It means histaklus hachazoka, to stare at the pratim and to go deep into the pratim. Which means his boinonus means it's not just that you know the details of it, but you reflect on it and you really take in the details in a very deep way. And when you take in those details and you stare at them, you know what it means to stare. I remember when I was a kid, my mother wanted to get me cultured. But is this today's this the Leila Nishmas?
Yes.
Leila Nishmas, or yeah?
Yeah.
Who?
No, actually,
Refuah Shleima. Well, that's an important distinction.
Yes.
So Refuah Shleima Sheyakov David Shilo Ben Shendel Sarah Dobrish. For Meher Bekroiva. So my mother tried to get me cultured, which I don't know, maybe she was successful, not successful, and it depends who you ask, but Beholof, and she used to schlep me to the Metropolitan Museum of Art. That was like the deal, we'd go to the Met, and then she'd take me to a movie, whatever. So I remember being as a kid, going to the Metropolitan Museum of Art, and you know they have those benches in front of the paintings, yeah? And I remember sitting on a bench, some person just staring at a painting. Just sitting on a bench staring at a painting. And I remember thinking to myself, what in God's name is he looking at? I went into the hallway, I went into a gallery, and I walked back and forth, I looked at every painting, you know, walked back and forth, and went through the whole gallery in like, you know, 1.5 minutes. This guy would just sit there staring at a painting, and then I saw that happening a lot. I would always wonder, like, what are you looking at?
Tired.
Huh?
Maybe they were tired.
Well, there are those people that sit on the benches. Actually, the one that I remember clearly was a young man. The one I remember clearly was a young man, actually, but... Anyway, so I remember asking, what's he looking at? What is it? What's he so interested in? Like, what's there to look at? And what's there to stare at so much? But obviously you understand that that's what's called his boinonus. His boinonus means to stare at something. Now, there's a word that I don't think I... Did I speak last week about letzayer? The word letzayer? Okay, so letzayer, everyone, what does it mean letzayer in modern Hebrew?
To make a painting.
Do you think that word letzayer would apply to God? Do you think you could be metzayer God? What do you think? Could you be metzayer God? Huh? Well, that's for sure. That's what, you know, there's a beautiful Gemara. You know, we say, Chana said, Ein sur kelekenu. Ein sur kelekenu. It's in Tfilas Chana, which literally means there's no rock like our God. But the Gemara says, Ein sur, the Altikri, Ein sur kelekenu, Ein tzayer kelekenu. That there's no tzayer, there's no artist like God. And all sorts of reasons the Gemara says, for instance, that he's able to draw a human being within the stomach of another human being, and that there are no two faces that are exactly the same, whatever. But that's not what I'm asking you. What?
Does draw and draw out relate to that?
What do you mean draw out?
It's one thing to draw.
Well, so here we're talking about when God...
out things of people, you know.
Well, so here we're talking about God creating. Tzayer as an artisan that creates, not just paints, but creates.
Right, so I'm saying... Your Hall of Hashem draw out certain things in you.
Well, what I'm asking now is, can you be Mitzayer God? Do you think that word, I understand that's what God is Mitzayer, agreed, but could we be Mitzayer God? Do you think we could paint God, a picture of God? Is everyone shaking their head vociferously? No, seemingly, right? So I'll tell you something fascinating. Look at the sheet in front of you. Could I have one?
Sure.
So look at the sheet in front of you. So look at the side of the page that says chapter 33 on the back.
The one in English, right?
And the one in English, yeah. So this is my condensed version of chapter 33. It's all the Alter Rebbe's words. I didn't add anything, but I made a couple of dots. It's not the entire chapter, but this chapter, I've said many times to anyone that listens, that in my opinion, this is the most important chapter of Tanya. And I've told everyone, whoever I can, as many times as I can over the past 20 years, that it's worthwhile to learn this chapter by heart and to live with this chapter. This chapter I recommend learning 10 times, reviewing it at least once or twice a week, and just, you know, walking with it and living with it all the time. It's a very important chapter. And essentially what it's about is the ultimate joy that comes from God, from reflecting on the unity of God. But look at the words, let's read inside. It says the Alter Rebbe, this also will be the true joy of the soul. If you want to know what's the true joy of the soul, 53 of the first part is 53 chapters corresponding to the 53 days he was in jail. Which, by the way, he wrote it before he went to jail, so it was interesting. This also will be the true joy of the soul, especially when one recognizes at appropriate times that one needs to purify and illuminate one's soul with the gladness of the heart. Now, this is the true joy of the soul all the time, and especially when one feels that they're in a bad mood, things are not going well, and they need to gladden themselves, they have to illuminate their soul with gladness of the heart, this is the best thing to reflect on. Let him then concentrate his mind and, how do you say this word? Envisage in his intelligence and understanding the subject of his blessed true unity. Which he goes on to explain, but before we go further, look at these words. Let him then concentrate his mind. In Hebrew, the words the Alter Rebbe used, that's the words in Hebrew. Envisage means from the word visualize. The yitzayer besichloi ubinosoi inyan yichudis bar chamiti. So the Alter Rebbe says, to come to gladness of the heart, to enjoy God's unity in a real way, to the extent that you become glad, and because, you know, that's the litmus test that it touched you, that it puts you in a good mood, right? That's the litmus test that had an effect on you, that it changes your mood. So to come to a state of reflecting on God's unity, to the extent that you actually get into a good mood, the gladness of the heart, the Alter Rebbe says, it's not enough to study about God, it's not enough to hear about God, you have to... I'm so hot. I'm sorry. So yeah. You have to actually. I think I will. So then you couldn't.
Oh, thank you.
If Vezra has it, then I can also. So the words that the Alter Rebbe says, the words the Alter Rebbe says, "V'yitzayir b'sochle b'nosei." Yitzayir b'sochle b'sichle b'nosei means Yitzayir means, so he translates Yitzayir as envisage, yeah? But Yitzayir means to paint a picture, to envisage a picture of God.
In your mind.
In your
mind. But
visualize.
It's not...
Visualize.
It's not visualize. It doesn't really mean to draw. It's
well, draw in your mind. To draw, right. Paint a picture, draw and visualize a picture in your mind.
Right.
But it's not...
Now,
as, it's not a... But I visit the station. It's not a God. It's a blessed true unity.
No, so what does it mean, his
That's
blessed...
Different.
Tell me, what does it mean to, how do you understand to paint a picture in your mind and visualize his unity? Let's start by saying, what does his unity mean?
So,
yeah, what does
so
Yichud Hashem mean?
The unification between God and the entire world is different than trying to envision God separate, when he looks like
it. Right. Okay, good. So, but the idea, that's true.
But it doesn't even say that.
Right, so obviously, it's a pasuk. What's the lashon? Mikra mufereshesi lo yirani ha'adam v'chai. Nobody could see God, right? Obviously, we're not talking about visualizing God as is. We're talking about visualizing His unity. But which those of you that were here last week, you already hear what we began doing last week. But the idea is that eventually, through these meditations and visualizations, you'll have a visualization through which you'll be able to visualize His unity. Not Him as is, but yes, His unity. But His unity, when you say unity and not God, it doesn't mean as opposed to God, because the unity means how Einon Melvada, that there is nothing other than Him.
Not as opposed, but it's a different subject.
But it's not just going to be unite the worlds with Him. That we just began last week, we're going to do more today, but it's more than just uniting the worlds with Him. It's going beyond that also, you'll see. You'll see what I mean. You'll see when we do it. But I'm just beginning introducing today's class before we actually go into a meditation. I'm introducing it by showing you this concept that the inyan of hisbeinonus means litzayer. It means to be able to picture the pratim in your mind. I'll give you a perfect example. Let's go back to the example we just said about when your French toast and Tropicana breakfast becomes interrupted and you're not able to continue eating. How is that? When you watched a CNN, 10-minute broadcast of what went on in Malaysia, or you read 20 pages of what happened, and you got into details, and you got into the details of what happened over there. You saw the terrible things that happened to the extent that you couldn't go on, right? Now, let's say 3 days later, let's say you learned those details well enough, and 3 days later you're walking down the street, and again you start thinking about that visualization. What's going to happen? It's going to change your mood again. That's a hisbeinus that you picture in your mind. The hisbeinus, you picture in your mind again those details. I don't need to tell you, by the way, that a lot of the psychosis, the psychological issues that we all have, are because of these mental associations that we have ingrained in us. The fact that we've experienced certain things, we get triggered by certain pictures that we see because of the garbage that we went through in life, and those pratim that are in our mind, it's so easy to go into hisbeinus of things that you actually saw and experienced. But you all know the feeling that you could just start picturing the horrible occasions in life, or very good horrible occasions in life, which is what Rabbi Katz was doing with his meditation, where you have his bonus of emotional events, and those trigger right away emotions. Because that's what Rabbi Katz was doing. By picturing these things, these emotional identification pictures, those pratim are able to be, or those arouse their emotions. But to do with God is much more difficult, because since God is abstract, so to speak, so here we have to learn about these pratim, and work on visualizing them in our minds.
He also said,
I'm sorry?
It's not
right, that's what I mentioned last week, that it's Chabad. Remember I said to you last week that that's the difference between the Piezetza meditation and Chabad. Piezetza meditation is right away trying to arouse emotions. Nothing to do with God. Think about your kids, think about happy scenes, think about whatever, and then throw it onto God. When your emotions are flared up, then think about God. Chabad's the exact opposite. Chabad says, no, meditate on God, just God, experience God, visualize God, which we'll learn what that is, and that should arouse the emotions, which is a lot more difficult, right? But I want to show that word litzayir. Now, I want to tell you something interesting, that the word litzayir, the Alter Rebbe, is not the first one that uses it. The first one, as far as I know, I would love to see it written before that, but the one that uses it before that is the Rambam. The Rambam, in his Hakdama to Perush HaMishnayos, he speaks about different levels of chokhmah, of muskolos, different levels of chokhmah. You know, we tend to there are people that would look down at a auto mechanic. An auto mechanic is a type of chokhmah. I tell you, every model of Ford from 1974 till 2014, it's a chokhmah. It's a very low chachma. It's a chachma that has to deal with mechanics, with physical things, but it's a chachma. The Rambam enumerates different levels of chachma. Then there's mathematics, then there's philosophy. He goes to different levels of chachma. Where obviously, the deeper the chachma means, the more abstract it is. Then the Rambam says, what's the greatest of all chachmas? And he doesn't say learning Torah. He doesn't say a blad gemar. The greatest of all chachmas, he says, and I'm quoting, L'tzayer l'nafshoy achtus HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's the words of the Rambam. L'tzayer l'nafshoy achtus HaKadosh Baruch Hu. To learn how to picture in your mind God's unity. So what we're doing together, what Chabad is bringing us is not a Chabad thing. It's not just a Chabad thing. It's a thing that all that tzaddikim did. In Chabad's form, what it does say is that that's what the Nevi'im did. When it says, Biyada Nevi'im Adame, that I am imagined by the Nevi'im, it also refers to that. You know that the Rambam speaks about Amar Nevuchim. You know, what's the difference between a Navi and a Chacham? In wisdom. A Chacham has what we call cognitive wisdom. The Rambam says a Navi had fulfilled and perfected imagination. We look down at imagination. We think imagination is something, you know, I told you last week, like the little purple dragon from Epcot, right? Like the, you know, Well, not but I'm talking about the figment. No, but I'm not a different purple dragon. Figment. Yeah, no, but I'm talking about figment from the ride in Epcot. Whatever, it's Nishkechelik, the same idea. But imagination, we seem to think, is like, we sort of look down at imagination as something that's not real, it's not whatever, but that's imagination, and imagination, Reb Tzadik speaks about all the time, that there's nothing that brings people to sin as much as imagination. All sin starts from imagination. John Keats said, heard melodies are sweet, but those unheard are sweeter. People are always striving to hear the unheard melodies, that they imagine that the unheard melodies are going to be so much sweeter, and that's what brings people to sin, etc., etc. So imagination is the root of all evil, to borrow that phraseology. And therefore we understand, if that's the case, that means imagination is also the root of all holiness. That imagination brings a person to the highest level of Kedusha. Imagination is the root of Nevuah, of prophecy. What?
You asked what the difference between Chacham and Navi is. And the four sons in the Haggadah, Chacham is one of them. Why don't we have a Navi?
Well, because he's talking about the four sons, Bizman Azeh, the Baal HaGadah was after Churban Beis HaMikdash. So we don't have prophecy, Mamish prophecy, when Bizman HaGolos.
Say that again.
The simple explanation is because the four sons, the Haggadah was written after the destruction of the temple when we no longer have prophecy, and he's speaking to, you know, pragmatically to people, the type of four sons that are around today. That's the simple answer. There is an idea which Baba Basra speaks about, Chacham Adif Minavi, but for a different reason, which I'm not going to get into now. But Lamaisa, I tell you a beautiful idea from Rav Kook, in Orot, based on the Rambam. Now the Rambam in the Gar the Perplexed, which is very interesting, because you know you would think Murin Nevuchim, the Gar the Perplexed, is like intellectual, rational. He speaks a lot about imagination, being able to use your imagination properly, letzayer, to be able to picture things properly in your imagination. So Rav Kook writes in Orot, and I don't remember in the first part, Rav Kook says an incredible thing. Rav Kook says that the reason that Yeshua married Rochav. Now, you all know a profession that Rochav was in, you know, before she converted to Judaism. So, and Yeshua married her. Yeshua was the Gadol HaDor, and he married her. So, the Rav Kook writes about the fact that that's because perfected imagination is necessary for redemption, for prophecy. And that world of that world that Rochav was in is all about imagination. So, to perfect that, Yeshua wanted to perfect that, harness that, to be able to bring about more prophecy to the world. And what Rav Kook says is that as the visualizations that we had in the temple, in the Beis HaMikdash, we actually saw God, as that diminished, prophecy was lost. But Rav Kook writes an incredible thing in Orot. He says that's why the Lebo art, the beautiful art, developed very much the past 200 years. He says that's why theater and art and these things have developed over the past couple of hundred years. He says that's a preparation for prophecy. That's what Rav Kook writes. That all the art and the theater and all these things that have developed in humanity is to train the mind to once again. Kilo Rav Kook is saying that throughout the Middle Ages of Judaism, when people were just learning the Gemara and they were not using their imaginations, they weren't fit seats for prophecy. But to be able to become fit seats for prophecy, you have to be able to use your imagination. And that's why Chassidus is a part of that preparation to be able to do these meditations. So this idea of his boinenus, which means his stakles achazaka, to be able to envisage this unity, and we'll continue, we'll go through, I don't want to go through the text now, because I want to go through the meditations, and then we'll see it in the text. But what I'm trying to tell you is that this idea of having the refined and perfected imagination and these meditations is not just a Chabad thing. It's an idea that this is preparation for Mashiach. It's the preparation to allow oneself to have a prophetic experience, because as one is able to then visualize God, it's obviously not real prophecy, but it's like prophecy.
I couldn't help but think about that saying somewhere that prophecy is given to fools and children, and children are the only ones left really who use the imagination.
Exactly.
Nowadays.
And fools too.
Yes.
Those that don't have are not burdened by the intellect.
They're right. So they don't have those set rules and values, and they're free to just be
100%.
And that's why they can.
And that's why Chassidus is all about, it talks all the time about being like a child and being like a fool. That's what about, the Chassidus is all about coming to a level of shtustik dusha, which means to transcend your intellectual powers, to come to a level that's beyond that, which means to be a fool in a holy way, and to be childlike. Very much so, because it's, so to speak, to go beyond intellect. See, Rabbi Yoel Kahn, who's one of the biggest mashpia in Chabad, he always says, people think that Chabad is about seichel. Chabad is not about seichel at all. Chabad is not philosophy. Chabad is using your intellectual powers to transcend, to realize your intellect is nothing, and transcend it, to come to a level that transcends seichel, that transcends intellect. But of course, it is to be able to go beyond intellect.
But it
depends what you mean by intellect. This is what I meant. I said last week to the young woman that asked the question. It depends what you mean by intellect. It doesn't mean you have to be an intellectual.
No.
What it means to use your intellect means to use these intellectual ideas that we're learning to reflect on them, to use your chachma and bina. It doesn't mean that you have to become a professor of Hasidic philosophy, not at all. You have to have a certain picture, certain ideas that you can meditate on, and then you could be close to Hashem. Then you could have this prophetic-like experience. All the tzaddikim taught that chassidus is a taste of nevuah, and to have these visualizations of God is a taste of nevuah. So that's the meaning of his bainunus. So it's what the idea that we're trying to do is to try to have to paint pictures in our minds, these pictures, and hold on to them, and as the Alter Rebbe say, concentrate his mind and envisage his intelligence and understanding his true unity. That's this idea of this his bainunus that we're doing. Okay, any other questions? I just wanted to speak that out. Okay, so we're gonna
You're gonna give us like ideas of what you might do to Hashem's unity.
We're gonna do that. We did last week one meditation. We're gonna go back to do that one, and then we're gonna go further. They're very cumulative. In other words, all the different levels. The reason that his boinenus can take a very long time is because if you have enough information and ideas, then it takes a while to go through the different levels of meditations. So we'll see, as we go along, you'll see why it is his unity. You'll understand what it means that's the unity of Hashem. Okay? Any other questions? Okay. So let's go. Let's try to...
Does it help to dim the lights when you do this?
I don't know. I don't know. Could be. I'm not...
Sit over here.
It definitely... Well, that's a skula to fall asleep. That's a skula nifla to fall asleep. Mamish. There's a story they say from the Chaim Shalbrook was a mashpia. He used to he joked once. He said that there was once a Jew, a chassid, that used to say Tikkun Chatzos every night by the door. You know, the meaning was to say it by the door, by the doorpost, by the mezuzah. And then you know he decided that he wanted to be an anuv, and he didn't like that people saw that he was praving Tikkun Chatzos. They were saying Tikkun Chatzos Brabham, so he wanted to do it. You know, b'seiser. He decided he would do it in his house. So then he started doing it in his house, but then like he said that his wife sees him. And then she'll think that he's a big tzaddik. So he decided that he was going to do it, you know, under the covers. So Chaim Shalbrook says, Mackenzich Forstel, and how long that lasted. The Tikkun Chatzos under the covers. So the idea being that, you know, sometimes we try to do things in a way that is too comfortable or too private. It's also not very good. Okay, but there's not, you know, in meditation groups and things like that, there's very much a... focus on techniques and positions and breathing and these things. Those things all exist in different svarim. I'm not saying they don't. But in Chabad, the most important thing is the actual ideas themselves. Which position you're in, when you do it, how you do it, could be when you're driving, it doesn't really matter. It's that you get the ideas clear. So however is comfortable for you. So, okay. So let's start. Huh?
We're ready.
It's always good to laugh. So that's definitely. Huh? The what? Thinking about what? Anyone that made great, progress in the world had imagination. That's for sure.
So Walt Disney had an amazing imagination.
Everywhere, all progress came from imagination.
Dimion.
So when I was thinking, I kept thinking this over and over again. She talks about art, and she talks about Preston. And there's the famous architect, Mies van der Rohe.
Who?
Mies van der Rohe.
Is that male or female?
Male. And his famous line is, God is in the details.
Mm-hmm. God is in, that's his line. I've heard that before, God is in the details.
Right.
But that's his line?
He's an architect.
Uh-huh. They say, they asked Michelangelo how he was able to make such great sculptures. And, you know, he was essentially, he didn't want to paint. He always wanted to be a sculptor. You know, that he painted was always against his will. He was forced to paint. But so he said that he would, when he looked at a stone, when he looked at the slab of stone, he saw Moses or David or whatever, he saw the figure in it, and he just saw that figure was waiting to be released from the stone, to be released. So.
Wow.
Okay, let's go. All right, so we're going to start again with this bonus that we did last week. I know it's very hard to go into that state. It's very difficult to go in that state, but let's try to... Okay, so the first thing we're going to start with is bonus, the lowest level that we're starting with, is the hisbonus of ma kodesh boch ma nefesh malas aguf kacha kodesh boch malas ha'olam, that just as the soul fills the body, so does God fill the world. So we're trying to ma nefesh malas aguf kacha kodesh boch malas ha'olam, just as the soul fills the body, so does God fill the world. But again, we don't want to get an idea on a paper. We want to get the idea in our mind. So we have to start picturing. We're going to have to start by picturing the body and the soul, because that's the mashal that the Gemara is saying, to be able to then see, begin visualizing God's presence in the world and His being, His light in the world. So you have to first try to picture the soul and the body. So it's very important to go to the details and to see what's the soul doing to the body. So you picture the body and all the different limbs. You picture the head with the senses, the sight and the hearing and the smell and the speech, and you feel that the soul is enclosed in the head and giving all the senses the ability to do what they need to do, for the eyes to see and for the ears to hear. And you feel that vitality in your own face, in your own head. You feel that there's a vitality, that there's a soul that's allowing you to hear, and you feel that there's something that's allowing you to see. And you follow it down the rest of your body, and you feel all the other limbs, you feel your hands, and you feel your feet, and you feel your stomach, and all of a sudden you pay attention that there's a life force in you. You don't just know that there's a life force in you, you feel that there's a life force in you. You don't know what it is, you don't have a recognition of what it is, you wouldn't be able to define it, but you could feel it. And you feel that vitality within you, and you, again, listen carefully, you can't picture the vitality itself because you don't know what it looks like because it doesn't have a form, but you could picture how that vitality, you could feel how the vitality is vitalizing all the aspects of your body. You start moving your feet, wiggle your toes, and you feel that there's a vitality in your toes, and you feel a vitality in your feet and in your hands, and you feel that there's this soul, this nefesh, that's completely permeating your whole body, on all the limbs of your body. It's giving it life, it's controlling your body. It's the breath that you take, and it's everything that's all the being, all the life that you feel, and every feeling, even your intellect and emotions, even when your heart feels something, when you feel awkward or you feel happy, that's all that vitality of the soul. So think about try to picture details of how many different things your body is doing and is happening within you, and that one soul, one vitality, that one nefesh is pumping its vitality to do all those different things. Almost like electricity pumps its electricity. We could use another mashal, even though it's not a mashal the Gemara says, but we could use this mashal to make it easier for us a little. Picture a house and what electricity is doing in any house at any given moment. And sort of take a bird's eye view, look at a house, and see that electricity is being pumped into all the different things in the house, yeah? and see how it's making the refrigerator make things cold, and it's making the microwave oven make things hot, and it's making the air conditioner that you're hearing work. There's electricity, it's turning on the light that's in the room. The electricity is doing all these different things. This one light is making all these things happen in the house. You could take a bird's eye view all of a sudden in your mind, and all of a sudden, so to speak, zoom out and picture all of Woodmere and all the different houses in Woodmere, and think about how electricity is running from one electric wire to all these houses in Woodmere and how it's making all these different things happen. Then keep in your mind that picture, and now picture again the life force in the body. Picture again the life force in the body and try to picture again all details of you, of different things that are going on in your body at this moment as you're feeling, and how that life force is doing the same thing to your body like the electricity is doing to the city, to Woodmere, to the house. But feel the vitality within you. Keep feeling it. Keep feeling it and feeling how it's doing different things. If you need to continue wiggling your toes and moving your hands or breathing in and out, and feeling that vitality in you, feeling that soul within you that's bringing to life your entire body at every moment. Keep that picture in your head. Keep that picture in your head. Don't lose it. Don't lose that feeling of your soul. And now, at the same time, and concentrate, and now at the same time when you're keeping that picture and that feeling of your vitality in your body, now look at the world. Try to picture the world, but let's start small. Let's start with a tree. Let's picture a tree, a beautiful tree that you know, and think about how there's a vitality that's allowing the tree to grow and to make the leaves grow, and then picture flowers and a nice garden, and see there's a vitality that's at this moment giving the flowers and the grass and the tree the ability to live. And picture how the vitality is within the grass and the trees and the flowers, like the soul within your body. Feel that there's this vitality, this light that's in vitality that's in the trees, the vegetation. And then, so to speak, zoom out and sort of picture all the animals that you could try to picture a picture of different animals and different people in the world. And see that there's a unified vitality that's giving life to all of it. And sort of now you do microcosm, macrocosm. This is the time to do microcosm and macrocosm. Picture the body and the vitality in it, that you're feeling the vitality in your body as the microcosm. And then the macrocosm, see the whole world as having the light in it that's vitalizing everything in the world. And that is the light of God. That vitality that's making the world breathe and exist and have and be alive, that's the light of God. And make sure you focus on a lot of different details of the world and the details of the world around you. That God is not just an infinite being, that God's light is flowing and permeating the world around you, just like you feel your soul filling your body. You feel your soul filling the body, you feel it. Now feel in the same way, try to picture this light of God, which again, you don't know what it looks like, but you're picturing that there's this light, this vitality, that's vitalizing the whole world around you. And try it again. Try to use your imagination. Think of different pictures. Think of different pictures of beauty that you know. A beautiful sunrise, a beautiful sunset, a beach, a mountain. And see how there's the light of God that's vitalizing it, making it alive, bringing it all to be able to be alive at all times. The vegetative life, the animal life, the human life. There's this one unified life that's pulsating through all of the world. And try to feel that light of God. Now feel it, like you feel the soul in your body. Feel the light of God that's within the world. Feel that there's a united, this is the most basic level of the unity of God, is that there's one united force, vitality, elokus, godly light, that's vitalizing everything. The details that you see, just like the details that you see in the world are just the external garment. The details that you see in the world, the beauty that you see in the world, are all the external garment, but there's a unified vitality that's pumping life force into it at all time. Let's go back to the body again. Do you see that there's a unity? The unity that's unifying all the different, hundreds of different things your body is doing, the different limbs and the different parts of the body and the internal organs. There's a unity, there's a life force that's making your lungs breathe and your heart beat and your breath and your blood run. There's one vitality that's unifying everything. So to now look at the macrocosm of the world and see how there's one light of God that's vitalizing everything in the world. And now try to feel that light of God that's pulsating within the whole world around you. Try to feel it, that is the light of Hashem. That is the light of Hashem. Hashem is not far, and He's not just infinite. He's within, his light is within everything around you, like your soul is within your body. Picture that now. Try to picture these two things back and forth on the two sides of your mind, and try to feel the light of God that's within everything in the world. Now, we're going to go a step deeper. So keep doing that. This is what we did last week. Keep doing that. Keep focusing on these pictures. And keep moving around and back and forth between the two pictures. Feel that unity of the soul and the body, how it's unifying and it's bringing about everything, causing everything to happen in the body. And you're seeing on a larger scale how the light of God is doing that to everything in the world. And again, picture things, beautiful things that you see, birds and trees and a scene that you know, or your own home, or your own being, and see the light of God that's in that. Feel the light of God that's within that, like the soul and the body. But now we're going to go a step deeper, and this is a step that the Baal Shem Tov taught that's not found in the Gemara. Now I want you to look again at the soul and the body. Look again closely, envision, visualize, use your imagination, visualize the soul in your body, and how it's pumping vitality in all the different organs in the body, the different functions of the body. So the soul is completely in control of the body, and that's how God's light is with the world. It's completely vitalizing the body. That so too is the light of God in the world. But now, look again and feel again the soul and the vitality in your body. But now I want you to notice something. Notice that even though you feel that soul that's vitalizing all the different aspects of your being, notice that at the end of the day, the body and that life force are two different things. That's why the parable I gave you, the electricity, is a perfect parable. Let's use that. Look again at your house, that the electricity is doing tens of different things in your house. It's making the refrigerator cold, it's making the microwave hot, it's making the air conditioner run, and the radio run, and the lights to burn, all the different things electricity is doing, but all these utensils and the electricity are two different things. The electricity is vitalizing them. But they, the vessels themselves, exist in and of themselves. Now look at your body and your soul and feel that it's the same thing with your body and your soul. Your body is a vessel, and your soul is that light that's vitalizing your body, and you're feeling how that light is a unifying force that's unifying all the different aspects of your body and the whole organism of who you are. But now feel that that soul that's vitalizing your body, that's in your hands right now, move your hands, move your feet, you feel that soul. Feel now how, at the end of the day, that vitality and your body are two different things. The soul is vitalizing your body, but it's not bringing your body into existence. The body and the soul are still two separate entities. Just one is vitalizing the other. Now, picture now the world, and look again at the world and the light of God that we've been picturing, that the Gemara says is like the light of the soul and the body. Picture the world. Picture a tree. Picture birds. Picture a beautiful sunset. Picture all the people in Manhattan and how their vitality, there's the vitality of the light of God that we've been saying is pulsating through them and giving them vitality like the soul and the body. But now listen carefully. But now understand that unlike the soul and the body, the light of God in the world is not two separate things. Physicality and the light of God are the same thing. Physicality is a way that the light of God is manifesting. So here we'll say that the world to the light of God in it is not like the soul and the body. Here you need to picture the difference. Picture how the soul and the body, even though it's vitalizing the body, they're two different things. But here I want you to picture now, go back to the world and the light of God. And when you're picturing the tree that the light of God is vitalizing, but now picture that it's not just vitalizing the tree, it actually is manifesting as the tree. Picture the millions of people in Manhattan that until now you were looking at the light of God that's giving them the ability to live their life, but it's not just vitalizing them, it's becoming them. The Shekhinah, this light of God that's within the world, is not just vitalizing the world, it's not just giving it the ability to live, it's becoming the world. I want to give you another meditation to understand this. Picture a cup filled with... Keep those two images in your mind. I know you have to try to compartmentalize them. You have on one side, you have the picture of the soul and the body. Keep that picture, and at the same time, keep the picture of God's light in the world. Keep them right now in the background of your mind. And now at the forefront of your brain, try to picture a cup full of coffee. a styrofoam cup full of coffee. Picture a styrofoam cup full of coffee. And now I'm going to say to you, is the cup full of coffee? Picture completely to the brim filled with coffee. Now I'm asking you, is the cup filled with coffee? So you would say, yeah. But I'm telling you that it's not. The cup is not filled with coffee. The cup is filled with styrofoam. Coffee fills the empty space that the cup makes. But the cup itself is filled with styrofoam. So when we say that the light of God fills the world, it's not like the coffee in the styrofoam cup. The light of God is like the styrofoam. When we say the light of God fills the world, it's not like the coffee in the cup or the soul in the body. Do you see how like the coffee in the cup is almost like the soul in the body? But when we say that the light of God fills the world, it's like the styrofoam. The light of God is becoming the world. The chair that you're sitting on, feel the chair that you're sitting on. You feel that the feeling of the chair you're sitting on, that's the light of God. There's a contracted little drop of God's light that's becoming the chair you're sitting on. It's not just vitalizing the chair, it is that chair. Feel the table that's in front of you or the floor under your feet. It's all the light of God that's not just vitalizing it, but becoming that. When you're looking at the birds and looking at the trees, it's all the light of God. And that's what the Baal Shem Tov said. Gaze, bear in mind that you're seeing the Shekhinah as you're gazing at physical objects. Bear in mind that you're seeing the Shekhinah as you gaze at physical objects. You're seeing the Shekhinah. And then meditation, let's do it again. Look again at the soul and the body. I know this is difficult, but look again at the soul and the body. And see how the soul and the body is a unified, vitalizing force to everything in the body. And feel that soul in your own body. Feel it, that it's a unifying force that's vitalizing everything in your body. And now look again at the world and see how the light of God is vitalizing everything in the world. See how they are similar first. That it's pumping vitality into everything in the world. But now let's go back again deeper and see how they're not similar. Because now look at the soul and the body and see how the body is something separate from the soul. And so even though you feel that life force within you, the body is something separate from it. But now look at the world and see how the world, visualize how the world is all that light of God manifesting as things of this world. So when we say the unity of God, there's an essential unity that not just that's vitalizing everything, but what everything essentially is. You've all learned what science says, that there's essentially everything is energy, it's just protons, neutrons, electrons, it's all just energy manifesting as different things. That energy is the light of God that's becoming all of reality. So now feel the light of God in everything around you. Feel that everything around you is the light of God. Feel that you are the light of God. That soul that we were meditating on before, now unite the two images and feel how that soul is the light of God and your body is the light of God. And everything around you is that the Shekhinah, the contracted, that light of God that's becoming the world around you. So anywhere you are, im esak shamayim sham ota, v'atziya sha'ol hineka, if I reach up to the highest heavens, there you are. And if I go down to the lowest pits of hell, hineka, you're here too. Or like the Berditchever said, tzofein du, dorim du, mizrach du, mayrv du, 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 you, north is you, south is you, west is you, east is you. When you say you to God, you're looking at the world, it's all His light. It's all Him. You're feeling that you are part of His light. You're part of all of reality that is His light. That's what it means that He's memale kol almin. His light fills the world, not just like the coffee fills the cup or the soul fills the body, but like the styrofoam. His light is becoming the world around you. Feel how the light is everything beautiful that you know in the world and everything grand that's grand in the world. Feel that that is His light. Okay, and slowly come back. Now try with your eyes open when you're looking at the world around you. Try to keep in mind what you just meditated on, that everything is the light of God. Everything you're going to look at now is the light of Hashem. How was that? Anyone able to feel that? That closeness to God?
I didn't want to come back.
If you come to be able to meditate on that, it's an unbelievably deep, close experience of God, very acute experience of godliness. And then you'll be able to come back because you'll still be with it, Atziyah Sha'ol Hineka. You'll still be with it when you open your eyes, and you'll still see it in the world around you. You have to then train yourself to see with your eyes open, like we spoke about at the end of last week's class.
So why do you say then come back?
What?
Then why do you say come back?
Because to open your eyes and you have to look at the world head on, and then continue to bring that meditation in the world.
I think that's easy to do when you're surrounded by nature.
It's always
easy
to do. It's always
easy. I was like looking, like, okay, I was like listening to this year from last week so far, and
yeah.
I was looking at the, you know, when I was looking at the sunset or the, like, you know, the trees and everything, it just, I kind of felt what you were speaking about even more, you know, just seemed easier.
It's always easier with nature, right? Because they don't seem to be a separate entity. Yeah.
I can't seem to reconcile the meditation where if someone is ill and parts of their body are not functioning well or not what they should be, let's say, how you could then feel that suffusification of it being God.
So at this stage of meditation, it's important to try to only reflect on positive things. It's very challenging to do that meditation on things that are negative. So you have to try to focus at this point on the only positive things.
So there will be a meditation where the reality can be incorporated?
Well, again, it depends what you're looking at. I mean, you know, the Rabbi Akiva, when he was tortured to death, you know, the famous thing his student said to him, Rabbeinu Ad Kan. He was saying the Shema, and his student said, Rabbeinu Ad Kan, to this extent. And he said his whole life he was waiting to be Moser Nefesh. So the famous question is, the students didn't know that it's a mitzvah to Mesiras Nefesh? So the answer is because they saw that he was saying the Shema, means that he was seeing God's light in the Romans that were torturing him to death. So the highest level is to see it in everything. But right now, at this stage, it's important to focus on only things that are only things that are positive, that bring positive feelings. I want to shoot. Let's do this text inside. Take a look at the sheet in front of you. I want to shoot this text, but the other side of the page now. I told you this sentence last week, but I want to see it with you again. The essential thing, however, is the mental training. Do you feel how we just did now is mental training?
Uh-huh.
How long did we do this for? I think about 15 minutes.
It's very hard to go back and forth.
Huh?
It's very hard to go.
What do you mean back and forth? The different pictures?
From the body to,
like... It's
like both ways.
It's gonna come with practice. I didn't copy the next sentence. Let me read to you what it says here, and then I'm gonna respond to your question, okay? Look, it says the essential thing, however, is the mental training, which in Hebrew you look is a hergel. Mental training, to habituate one's mind and thought continuously, that it ever remained fixed in his heart and mind, that everything one sees with one's eyes, the heaven, the earth, and all that is therein, constitutes the outer garments of the king. They're the outer garments of the king, but it's the king that's in all of them. You see how it's like the electricity with the house with electricity, or the body with the soul? And this way you'll constantly be aware of the inwardness and vitality. And the next words in Tanya, you hear the next words in Tanya, Bracha, the next words the Alter Rebbe says is that Vizeo Gamkin, I'm quoting, Vizeo Nichol Gamkin Beloshen Emuna Miloshen Oymen Hama'aminis Yodav. You know what Aman is? What's an Omen? Aman.
An artist.
So Al-Jabba says part of the word Amuna is Gamz and Nichol B'milas Amuna Kmo Aman Hama'aminis Yodav. Like an artist that trains his hands. How do you learn how to play piano?
Practice.
Which book do you read?
Notes.
And if you read notes, you'll be able to play piano? without putting your fingers on the... Never. If you don't put your fingers, it'll never happen. Training is always doing it, right? The Altarebbe says, part of emunah is training your mind. Training our mind to meditate, of course it's difficult. It's very difficult. The reason with Rabbi Katz it was easier was because, again, there it's things that are much closer to you. It's thinking about things that are closer because it's emotional identification. If I tell you to remember a movie that you saw, you'll be able to do that in 10 seconds. Or something that happened to you, emotional identification, that's much easier because it's something that's closer to your emotions. That's why the Piazzetzner had that type of meditation. But the Altarebbe wants to go for the goal. The Altarebbe wants that you should habituate yourself to meditate on godliness. So you have these images of godliness to meditate on. Of course they're difficult. But, I mean, if you were able to do it, at least for part of it, I don't know how long we went, 10 minutes, 15 minutes, but it's difficult, but it's the more you do it, the more that you'll be better at it.
I think also the more that we learn about it, easier it is.
Yeah,
you know? I mean,
more details, more bina. This meditation, by the way, is Psukei Dezimra. What we did tonight is the meditation of Psukei Dezimra, which is why Psukei Dezimra speaks so much about the Bria, about the world. Psukei Dezimra is all about creation.
Mm-hmm.
And,
someone, just thinking of someone like Arya Kaplan, he himself was a physicist. So he just knew so much about the details of the majesty of the world that he didn't really have to try to bring it up so much. He was there.
Yeah,
but that's intellectual. But doesn't it help if you have to, if you want to, say, concentrate on say what's going on, the vitality in your body, that you're aware of 100%. Cells and that you're aware of the
stars.
But you remember how you felt. And that's like, so you're using the imagery also based on.
But it also builds in itself. If I would tell you now, I mean, you could try this now. If I would tell you now to try to close your eyes for a second and try to go back to that meditation, I could tell you, just do an experiment. Close your eyes now. Try to go back to that meditation right away. If I say to you now, look again at the soul and the body and look again at the God's light in the world. See how they're similar. See how they're different. Do you see how right away it's a little easier already? See how it's easier to get back there. It's easier to get back there and to picture it now because you're used to it. Right? You could go there much quicker now. The more you do it, the more you try, the easier, the more pictures become ingrained in your mind. It's hard if you spend a lot of time that you don't like anything. You know, you don't go on the treadmill for long enough, then you get back on the treadmill, you're huffing and puffing when you're going pretty slowly, because when you don't train yourself, you go out of shape. But when you get used to it and you do it more often, then it becomes very easy. I don't know, what does creative memory mean?
No, creating memory.
Creating memory, yes. Yeah, sure, it's creating images, it's creating new images and keeping them, sure. So this is the hard work, it's not easy. That's why it's called Aveda Shebelev, it's Aveda Satfila. It's hard work. Remember, I used to tell my students in yeshiva that, you're supposed to feel, people think that, I say, okay, now you finished davening, now go relax and play basketball. It's hard work. People, it's davening is not so... I think I told you once that somebody did research, and he put an Orthodox Jews, took their pulse, and he said that they were very calmed by davening. It's not supposed to be calm. It's supposed to be hard work. But this is the work that has to get done. This is how you start visualizing God's presence and feeling His presence. Tov. We'll continue next week, Mitzvah Shem. Next week we go deeper, a deeper meditation.
I kind of think of this book we mentioned once about it's called My Stroke of Brilliance.
Uh-huh.
And this woman spoke about how when she was getting a stroke and all her brain shatter stopped,
uh-huh.
She just felt like how everything, it was on the TED Talk, so it was like everything was connected. She just felt like this connection between everything, just with this one side of her brain stuff.
Well, I mentioned last week, that's what we spoke about when we were speaking about yoga, that usually we see things as the forest, so to speak, right? And we don't see the unity that's within all of them, because we're used to the forms that things take. We define reality by forms and not by existence, being. That's within all the forms. There's the united being that's in all the forms. Think about it for a second. Why do we define reality as forms and not matter? That's in the simplest level. There's matter and form, right? we define reality as forms. That's cantaloupe, that's
because,
watermelon.
Because matter, that would be all just one mush.
Right, exactly. So meditation is going into that one mush.
It's like in Star Trek when the transformer, you know, goes on the blip. I'm sorry.
I don't remember that one.
For your time.
No, but, I saw Star Trek. Well, Star Trek wasn't before my time, and I don't remember that
but,
one.
But it's when when matter gets transformed, let's say, up above or below, and if it's working correctly, it takes shape.
So, but I'm saying, but imagine that you're now looking, it's part of the meditation, meditate on reality as matter,
right,
without the form.
Right.
And then see that matter as being, what is matter, really? What is matter?
Right.
Scientists, that is the light of God, that's the matter.
Right.
And then you feel that closeness to you.
So next time someone says, what's the matter?
Right.
What do you mean by that?
Rebbe Ezra, you had an ambassador tonight. You had a pun.